very simply, two houses beside each other can have a completely different risk profile due to climate change. So
that's
one
crazy.
Could be very low risk, one could be very high risk, depending on topology, first floor height, material type of the roof, and so forth and so forth. So because we can get down to each individual house, that helps regulators shape policy to each individual homeowner.
Welcome back to Core Conversations, a CoreLogic podcast, where we tour the property market to investigate how economics, climate change, governmental policies, and technology affect everyday life. I am your host, May Claire Bolton-Smith, and I'm just as curious as you are about everything that happens in our industry. Through interest rate fluctuations, population migration, affordability issues, and climate pressures, data and its measurable insights have remained an anchor for the property market professionals planning their next move. And those data-driven insights are becoming increasingly accessible as well as insightful. There was a time when the property industry relied on spreadsheet inputs and printouts. Now, data is often available in cloud environments with analytics layered on top. But the explosion of data means that it can be hard to know where to start, especially if it means considering an investment in IT, infrastructure, or additional personnel. So, when leaders are looking for data to drive high-level business decisions, where do they begin? So to help make sense of the role data is playing in innovation and how to integrate these insights into daily operations, we have John Rogers, CoreLogic's Chief Innovation Officer, here today. John, welcome back to Core Conversations.
It's fantastic to be back, McClare. Thank you so much for the invite.
All right. Well, it's been a while since we've had you here, so I'm excited to chat with you. So, okay, let's start with just setting the stage with a couple of hypothetical, or maybe not so hypothetical, situations. So let's say you're in the business of trying to assess how future weather events could affect the level of economic capital at a bank. So is that something that we can do? Like, how do you anticipate what the future holds, especially with climate change and so many uncertainties?
Before we get into this conversation, I wanted to remind our listeners that we want to help you keep pace with the property market. To make it easy, we curate the latest insight and analysis for you on our social media, where you can find us using the handle at CoreLogic on Facebook and LinkedIn, or at CoreLogic Inc. on X, formerly known as Twitter, and Instagram. But now, let's get back to May Claire and John.
In terms of climate risk and climate risk analytics that we've gone to market with, we've helped several federal agencies, several banks assess risk.
Okay.
So let me start just quickly, remind on what climate risk analytics is.
Yeah, please.
It allows every company to measure, model, and mitigate the financial impact against every single property up to the year 2050.
Wow, okay.
No other company does that.
Yeah.
Like, literally down to every single house, understand the financial impact.
Amazing.
So we're working with a lender right now, Flagstar, and they've assessed their actual footprint of all their branches to understand the financial risk on their real estate, on their commercial real estate.
Yeah.
And are already putting in mitigation plans to harden those buildings and those structures against floods and hurricanes primarily.
Okay. Okay.
So there's a real life example of a company taking mitigation steps to protect their assets. And if you think about the impending SEC guidelines that are coming down the pipe, which is basically saying every public company needs to disclose any financial materiality due to climate change.
Yeah.
As part of their filings. So that's
likely to come
out in April this year. So that comes down to your footprint, you know, what warehouses, what branches you have, your book of business, and also your third party. So that's one way that we're helping our financial clients mitigate risk due to climate.
It's really exciting stuff. Okay, one thing I just wanted to clarify is you did mention the SEC. Can you just talk about exactly what that is?
The SEC is the Securities Exchange Commission. So they, if you're a public company, there's certain rules and regulations of how you disclose financial information. And there's new regulations likely to come out in April about any financial materiality on your on the company's P&L, essentially, due to climate change. So we're expecting that to come out pretty soon.
pretty soon. Yeah. This is just crazy, interesting stuff and just so relevant in today's environment, too. So that's why I'm really glad we're talking about that. I know we've done research and we actually had our chief scientist, Dr. Howard Botts, on the podcast last year talking about like the worst places and the best places to live according to climate change. So I know we've done that research on like the top 10 counties in the U.S. or some of the ones that have the greatest risk to climate change. So I guess the question is, you know, thinking of it in the context of data here is like, how can having access to like really granular data, specifically like at the individual property level, how can that, you know, help banks? Or even if we're looking at it from the homeowner's perspective, like how can that help weather the storms that are ahead of us?
Very simply, two houses beside each other can have a completely different risk profile due to climate change. So
that's
one
crazy.
Could be very low risk, one could be very high risk, depending on topology, first floor height, material type of the roof, and so forth and so forth. So because we can get down to each individual house, that helps regulators shape policy to each individual homeowner. That helps banks assess risk on their book of business down to each particular property. It helps insurers set premiums for each individual property. It helps insurers set incentives to lower the premium.
Yeah, you know, like mitigation efforts and such.
Exactly right. You know, the wildfire, you know, your fence is 12 foot away and so forth. And because if you can get down to each individual house, that helps a lot of the financial stakeholders put in place the right regulations and policies to help basically you and I protect our biggest asset. So that's why it matters. And obviously, if you add all of this up in terms of all the houses, it equates to about $43.5 trillion. So it's, as you know, it's the biggest asset class in the world. So it's well worth protecting.
Absolutely well worth protecting. It's interesting, too, about the, you know, some people don't quite understand or, you know, see how amazing things could be like at the actual property level. Like, so I live in Southern California. I've talked a lot on this podcast about buying a new house and moving to this new area. And, you know, this winter we've had some crazy rains here in Southern California. And, you know, just even having a conversation with somebody around the corner and, you know, saying, you know, I really hope that we don't get flooding. And I'm like, oh, well, actually, you know, the flood risk score of where we live is incredibly low. And they're like, oh, I'm really glad to know that we're not going to flood. I'm like, well, it doesn't mean you're not going to flood. It means that there's a lower probability that we'll flood. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, and actually your flood risk score is higher than my flood risk score because, you know, I'm a little bit further up the hill. So like it's something that just because you're in the same neighborhood, like, so from, if you're, I'm looking at that as, you know, friendly neighbor conversation with somebody of, you know, me being a data science weather nerd and them, you know, just kind of trying to understand what the risk their property may be. But if you look at it from like the broader perspective of a bank, or even if we go to like some corporations, like I think of retailers. So, you know, we've talked on this podcast too about different types of infrastructure and like moving forward with, you know, 5G technology and different types of infrastructure that we can have. Like, what if we think of like a retailer, somebody like Home Depot or AT&T? How can having this type of data and forecasting into the future, how can it help be helpful to somebody like them?
On a number of factors. So obviously, if I just think about climate in and of itself, it helps assess the risk of their supply chain, their warehouses, their distribution centers.
Sure,
Where do they need to make some places more resilient in terms of their current structures?
Yeah.
And where would they want to build in the future?
Yeah.
So that's one data point. The second part is within our location intelligence group, Anand Singh's leading a lot of new initiatives and understanding growth patterns in the United States.
Yep.
So understanding when land goes from, you know, agricultural to residential to single family homes in terms of land code usage, those are combined with other insights. Those are very early indicators of growth patterns in the United States. So if I'm an infrastructure company or a telco or an energy company or a retailer, I would want to know as soon as possible, understand those growth vectors in the United States and plan accordingly and invest accordingly as early as possible, depending on the segmentation of that market, the types of homes being built and so forth. So there's a lot of predictive insights that we're providing a whole range of sectors from our core markets like real estate, mortgage, insurance, and also into new markets like retail and infrastructure, as you mentioned there.
Yeah, so interesting. Yeah, and that those leading indicators, we actually just in a previous podcast just talked about that as well too, and the importance of geospatial data. And it's just really, really interesting and in how it is applicable to, you know, you mentioned telecommunications, telco, you know, different industries, and how understanding, you know, future expansion growth, of population growth, and how that's going to impact everything.
These growth indicators that John is talking about are what May Claire discussed with Joe Francica in our last episode. Tune into episode 87 to hear more about how location intelligence works and why it is so vital to the growth of the telco industry.
It's all just really interesting. And I want to stay on this topic of geospatial data right now, because, you know, we've talked a lot on this podcast about wildfire risk. I've talked a lot about, again, when I bought this house, about making sure I bought a house in a low wildfire risk area. But can we talk, you know, from a broader perspective of why is knowing exactly where a home is relative to what we call the wildland urban interface? So as you're getting closer to those really high wildfire areas, you know, why is it important to know exactly geospatially where that location is and how close you are to that risk?
It's probably a bit of a secret that CoreLogic fundamentally is a bit of a geospatial company. The geocoding
secret no longer. Attention, world.
Correct.
We are a geospatial company.
Correct. Well, I mean, totally right. So the ability to geocode the exact point on the earth where the parcel is, where the structure is, the topology of the land, allows us to measure anything. So distance to coast, distance to fire hydrant, distance to the wildfire, you know, urban interface. And that precise measurement is the fundamental component of understanding risk against each house, dependent on the peril that might affect it. In this case, obviously, we were talking about wildfire.
It's incredible.
We can't really do an accurate job. So it's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll throw in a plug for some of these products as well, too, because they're very near and dear to my heart. But even just, you know, you mentioned distance to fire station, distance to the wildland urban interface area or where the wildfire risk is. Also from an earthquake perspective, too, like distance to earthquake fault and like just distance to flood zone, distance to where you are to the coast. So knowing from the point on the earth, the property at risk and what everything you're exposed to, like it's really incredible to know the depth and breadth of the data we do have here at CoreLogic and just how applicable it is to various industries as well as just the average homeowner.
Exactly. And even the thing about wildfire, even just proximity to the next house. And is what's the material type of the house? Is it wooden and so forth? Because there's a high propensity and so forth.
Yeah, that's a really good point too. And we've chatted about that on this podcast as well too, as we've talked through mitigation, is like you could do every mitigated effort to your house to protect your house from wildfire. And your neighbor could have a stack of wood next to their house and they could be 5 feet away from you and everything you did doesn't mean anything. So like having that location proximity to different risk items, it's really important. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that up.
Before May Claire and John continue the conversation about innovation in the property industry, it's that time again. Grab a cup of coffee or your favorite beverage. We're going to do the numbers in the housing market. Here's what you need to know. Year over year, home price gains reached the highest rate in a year in January, but growth is expected to begin slowing in the coming months, falling to 2.6% by early 2025. In January 2024, U.S. home prices increased year over year by 5.8%. However, between December 2023 and January 2024, home prices declined by 0.1%. Between January 2024 and January 2025, CoreLogic expects home prices to increase by 2.6%. Higher mortgage rates and inventory shortages are exacerbating the nation's long-running housing affordability problem. States where wages are lower are particularly feeling the squeeze. While no individual state saw price declines, Spokane Valley, Washington, Palm Bay, Florida, Salt Lake City, Utah, Ocala, Florida, and Ogden, Utah are at very high risk for price declines. Meanwhile, Rhode Island, New Jersey, and Connecticut had the highest year-over-year increases, growing 13.2%, 11.6%, and 11% respectively. And that's the SIP. See you next time.
Okay. It's just, it's really remarkable about, you know, as I mentioned, depth and breadth of data and just the countless different scenarios that can evolve within our industry. I'm sure there's surprises that have come up. Is there any kind of like insights that have come up that have been surprises of things that we weren't necessarily expecting for different industries or so, or anything that kind of surprised us?
Yeah, plenty. It's amazing some of the work that the Office of the Chief Economist does. So that's led by Selma Hepp in our company, and Archana Pradhan has released a lot of research into migration patterns, the riskiest areas in the United States in terms of climate change and so forth, and just some interesting data points out of that research. So when you look at migration patterns, so there's an increase of migration out of some of the most populous and areas within the United States. So it's risen from about 19% to 23%. So more people are moving out of state.
Yeah.
But that still means 77% are still within state.
Yeah.
And it's interesting when you look at areas like LA County, San Jose, San Francisco, a lot of them are moving to Riverside and Stockton.
Mm-hmm.
Affordability, less risky areas due to climate. You see similar patterns also in Florida. So Miami-Dade is just a paradox. It's the riskiest county out of all 3,200 due to climate change.
Yeah.
It is the highest appreciation in terms of HPI, a home price index. So Selma's last report, I mean, like, the thing went up 10.7% in December.
That's crazy.
It's got the highest number of investors in terms of that gone from 19% to 23% pre-post-pandemic.
Yeah.
Yet the number of applications of people leaving Miami into areas like Tampa is on the increase. So I think there's signals there that things are beginning to shift in Florida, and they're taking note, because obviously Miami-Dade, in terms of the number of hurricanes and the damage it can cause, is at a very high risk. But it's just, I mean, it's what Archana does is take very complex issues and breaks it down so that the average layman like me can understand it. So just amazing work.
We love talking to Selma Hepp and our chief economist and that the people in that office as well, too. It's just incredible data that they're doing. So I appreciate that. OK, something I definitely want to talk about is, you know, some people might think of like all this highly analytical data that it's, you know, people sitting behind a computer and that's the only way you can access this. But I have to talk about, because everybody talks about this whenever we earlier this year, we had our Insurance Solutions Conference Interconnect, and we talked about that on this conference, on this podcast. And everyone was talking about John Rogers and his big screen. So we've got this, we just say John, that's John's carry-on. He takes it with him everywhere we go. But we have this massive, what we call our Discovery Center. Discovery Center, we have a physical one, but then, you know, John and his traveling Discovery Center. Can you just talk a little bit about, you know, why we took this approach to make this something that was so accessible and so visual? Because it's a showstopper. Whenever anybody sees, you know, John and his giant screen, to be able to see the power of this data right before their eyes.
It sounds like a Roald Dahl story, but the R&D facility that we take on the road, our research and development facility. So it's the ability to visualize, explore, and identify new solutions.
Yeah.
Climate being an obvious example. And most people love to visualize because it tells a story, and it's a great way to educate, understand what's happening on your book of business.
Yeah.
And then you can go and automate it within your claims claims platform, your loan origination system. So it's a really good way to visualize, explore, and discover new solutions. And it's just as you said, if I just showed you a spreadsheet of data,
no one's going to care.
Maybe you're going to only resonate with a certain population, which is probably actually including myself. But that's an aside. but the visualization just helps educate, allow people to understand, and then think about how we can, you know, either protect home ownership or, how do we take time, cost, and effort out of the loan origination process?
Yeah.
It really helps. So
it's captivating.
I'm glad you like it. I'm glad you like it.
Oh, we love it. We love it. It's funny because, you know, my family, we happened to run into John when we were at a CoreLogic event. And my husband still talks about the Discovery Center and, you know, John and his giant screen. So like being able to visualize this data. So it really is captivating from anybody, whether you're a data nerd or not. Like, it's really hard to not be captivated by what you're seeing come out of the Discovery Center. So yeah, this is a plug. If you ever get an opportunity to go to any of CoreLogic's events, John and his giant screen will be there.
Before we end this episode, let's take a break and talk about what's happening in the world of natural disasters. CoreLogic's Hazard HQ Command Central reports on natural catastrophes and extreme weather events across the world. A link to their coverage is in the show notes. February brought atmospheric rivers to inundate Southern California for the second winter in a row. Risk of flash flooding was widespread, with CoreLogic estimating that nearly 543,000 single and multifamily homes with a combined construction cost value of more than $258 billion are at risk of flash flood damage. Officials declared a state of emergency in 8 California counties, with evacuations in some areas. Then, the calendar flipped to March and brought with it the largest wildfire in Texas history. Within 48 hours of the Smokehouse Creek fire igniting, the blaze grew to over 500,000 acres and crossed the Oklahoma border. As Governor Greg Abbott declared a disaster across 60 counties, the Smokehouse Creek fire had burned more than the combined acreage of all Texas fires in 2023. By the morning of March 6th, the fire was only 44% contained, according to the U.S. government's Incident Information System. The wildfire was still ongoing as of this recording.
To finish up today, we have to talk about Gen AI, because that generative AI is the talk of the world right now. We've done a little bit of this on a previous podcast earlier this year. We plan to do a specific podcast on Gen AI coming up in a little bit as well, too. But I just want to talk about it, like, in terms of data and data concerns in particular. Like, everybody talks about data, you know, garbage in, garbage out. Like, when we're thinking of it in the context of Gen AI, like, how can we ensure we have good inputs? How can we ensure they have good data? How can we ensure that it's being helpful and not hurting things?
Very good question. So, firstly, from a CoreLogic perspective, we are very fortunate. We have the truth data set on all things property and location, full stop. You know, we procure over 22,000 data sources from a fax to a fax, all the way through to point cloud data. When you use Gen AI, as you've already mentioned, garbage in, garbage out, and we've seen a lot of some of the press and some of the maybe where it hasn't gone quite right for certain companies. If when you use it on the truth data set, the output is taken care of. So at CoreLogic, we're using Gen AI. You know, think about automating listings for a real estate agent. I can ask any question of CoreLogic's data for a portfolio manager to assess risk on my book of business.
Yeah.
The number of use cases and the applicability of it, I think, will completely digitize the real estate industry, which we've talked about that phrase, digitizing the real estate industry for probably decades, but probably really haven't quite made it. I think this is giving us the impetus to get there.
Well, I can't wait to see where the world is going to go, where CoreLogic is going to go. At this particular topic of Gen AI, I mentioned we actually, spoiler alert / you know, stay tuned. Amy Gromowski is going to join us in a couple of episodes to talk about Gen AI. So really excited to kind of dive into that a little bit deeper. But really are just, especially for somebody who's, you know, innovation is their life, John, like, it's just such a really interesting time to be alive.
I'm a fortunate person to run R&D for CoreLogic, so I'm a very lucky man. So,
we're lucky to have you.
It's all good. All good.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining, John. I feel like you and I could chat for hours about this, but it's been great to have you back on the podcast. And thanks for joining us on Core Conversations, a CoreLogic podcast.
Thank you as always, McClaire. Thank you so much.
All right. And thank you for listening. I hope you've enjoyed our latest episode. Please remember to leave us a review and let us know your thoughts, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast to be notified when new episodes are released. And thanks to the team for helping bring this podcast to life. Producer Jesse Devenins, editor and sound engineer Romeo Roman, our fax guru Erica Stanley, and social media duo Sarah Buck and Michaela Brooks. Tune in next time for another Core Conversation.
Are you still there? Well, thanks for sticking around. Are you curious to know a little bit more about our guest today? Well, John Rogers is the Chief Innovation Officer for CoreLogic and is responsible for the company's R&D, from driving new solutions that help businesses understand the climate change impacts on the real estate economy to groundbreaking models that identify suitable land for affordable housing development. The R&D group tackles major housing issues and works with clients to drive growth and mitigate risk on their book of business.